It's time for the Biblical Prophecy Program with your host, Dr. Alan Kirshner of Eschatos Ministries.
Hey, welcome back, everyone, to another episode of the Biblical Prophecy Program. Before I begin the program, I want to give a reminder that I currently support my family through this ministry. So if you benefit from this program or other resources at Eschatos Ministries, please consider supporting us by becoming a ministry partner, which is giving on a monthly basis. You can go to alankirshner.com and sign up, or I'll leave a link in the show notes. Okay, today I'm going to cover the major beliefs of amillennialism. So they have really four major beliefs. And this is the third traditional historical temporal interpretation. And what I mean by historical temporal interpretation is that there's two major millennial views. One is which is really more the traditional view, and that is that the millennium will occur in history during a period of time. All right. So, of course, the debate is, when does the binding of Satan begin? That's always the hinge pin of the debate. But the other major views major view is the, we would call it, like, for example, a thematic view or non-temporal interpretation, which I will get into next time. So premillennialism, postmillennialism, and amillennialism, all three share the belief that the millennium, there will be a millennium. Of course, we all disagree on the nature of it and when it begins. So amillennialism, this third view, is a non-sequential view. Okay, so yes, they believe that the millennium is going to happen in history. Of course, they don't believe it's going to begin in the future because it's happening right now. So, but it's non-sequential, and by non-sequential, what I mean is that they believe that the binding of Satan is not, in Revelation 20, is not the result, not the consequential result of Jesus's eschatological victory battle in Revelation 19. So for whatever reason, they come to the, you know, the end of the chapter in chapter 19. And then at the beginning of chapter 20, at the artificial chapter breaks, they retroject the binding of Satan back to the first coming of Christ. So they recognize that Revelation 19, the battle there, that's in conjunction with this future second coming of Christ. But then non-sequentially, when they come to the binding of Satan, now we're somehow, you know, we're talking about the first coming of Christ and Jesus binding Satan at his first coming. As you can probably tell by some of my words, I disagree with it, but I don't misrepresent the other side. That's what they believe. So now some amillennialists believe that the label, that is amillennialism, the label is not well chosen, since the a privative may lead interpreters to think that amillennialism denies any notion of millennialism. So alternative descriptions proposed by amillennial thinkers have been, for example, inaugurated millennialism. Some prefer the term realized millennialism, and then some historic millennialism. But we'll just kind of stick with amillennialism, since it's just so baked into the jargon of the millennial debate. Okay, so again, by non-sequential, I mean the framework that is based on a temporal framework, but does not view the episodes of Revelation chapter 19, verse 11 through 21, and chapter 20, verses 1 through 6, unfolding sequentially. So amillennialism maintains that the millennium binding of Satan and the millennial reign of the saints, they are they're recapitulations of the inter-advent period, aka the church age, occurring before the parousia and Christ's victory at the eschatological battle in chapter 19, verses 11 through 21. So they believe that the binding of Satan in the reign of the saints will happen before the event that is portrayed in Revelation 19. So, and now they would, amillennialism also views the Gog-Magog battle in chapter 20, verses 7 through 10 as a recapitulation of the battle described in Revelation 19, viewing them from two different perspectives. The traditional interpretation of amillennialism is additionally characterized by these four beliefs. Locating the millennial kingdom not in the future, but having been established at Christ's first coming and being realized in the inter-advent period. Number two, the parousia will occur at the end of the millennium period with the resurrection, last judgment, and the consummation of all things in the eternal state of the new heavens and new earth. Number three, the quote, first resurrection, end quote, is understood in a spiritual sense. Depending on the interpreter, for example, they would see the resurrection as like through baptism. Some would say it's the saints' regeneration throughout the church age, or at death, when the soul is united with Christ to reign with them during the millennial kingdom. So that's how they understand the first resurrection. I will definitely be talking, doing a whole episode on showing, explaining how that is just not the case at all. I mean, it is absolutely clear in Revelation 20 that the resurrection being described there is the physical resurrection. It's not, we don't need to spiritualize it or make it baptism or, you know, being united with Christ. It's the resurrection of the body. Okay, number four, amillennialism usually views the immediate period before the parousia pessimistically. So while most amillennialists construe the beast in Revelation as a historical fulfillment during the inter-advent period, many of these same interpreters also believe there will be a future manifestation of an antichrist figure who would emerge just before the second coming to persecute the people of God. The point here is there's some amillennialists, although you have some today, obviously, I believe Ritterbarger also believes that there's going to be a future antichrist. But some would, but many amillennialists have believed not in a future literal antichrist, but more of a, symbolic antichrist figure or embodied in an institution, like, for example, the Roman Catholic Church or some other type of institution. So to conclude all of these views, this survey of traditional views, I note in my book here, Oinema, a theologian, captures these distinctives of all three views. I think this is why I quote him here, because it really, again, it captures the essence here. He says, the fact that the post-millennial approach does not expect a physical resurrection at the beginning of the millennium makes it similar to the amillennial approach. But it should be recognized that unlike post-millennialism, amillennialism does not anticipate the millennium as a golden age still in the future. On the other hand, it is precisely in this respect that post-millennialism resembles pre-millennialism, since both interpretive approaches expect that millennium as a special period in the future, which will constitute the final epoch of human history. Essentially, they have the same future eschatological perspective. That is where their basic difference from amillennialism lies. Unlike premillennialism and postmillennialism, it does not expect the millennium as a special period in the future. Okay, so having described the three traditional interpretive frameworks from in the last few episodes from a historic temporal viewpoint, both sequential and non-sequential, I will consider alternative interpretations that are not concerned with framing its interpretation on a temporal principle. So I will be addressing non-temporal interpretations next time. Thanks, everyone, for listening.